The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
The team is accountable for delivering something. There's a reason that team came together, right? There is a deliverable. And the more that you have people really bought in understanding what you're trying to deliver and why, the more that you can then take accountability and also really internalize that goal.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Erin Woody. Erin has some very cool roles in her recent past, including the Vice President of Marketing, Culture, and Entertainment at Red Bull, and then Senior Vice President of Music at On Location. There's some cool things that we can cover today from those experiences. I'm excited to dive in. Also, very excitingly, she has a new business, founder and executive coach at Two Cats in a Palm Tree, which is an awesome name. So welcome to the show, Erin. I'm delighted to be having this conversation today.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dane, for having me. I'm excited to be here as well.
You and I have had a couple of opportunities to speak now, and I'm really energized by sort of some of the perspectives that you bring, particularly to coaching with some of the different teams, projects, environments that you've had the benefit of being a part of over the years. Perhaps you can give us a little bit more of a story that joins the dots on your journey.
Yes, absolutely. So as you said, now I am the founder of Two Cats in a Palm Tree, which is a coaching and consulting practice. I mainly support leaders and teams within the industries that sit within consumer brands, a lot within sports and media and entertainment. And that came from kind of me spending years within the spaces of brand lifestyle and in the consumer, right? So that started very early on in my career, working in live music and working within those spaces, kind of bringing to life art and creative. And then that evolved over the years to, as you said, moving to a brand known as Red Bull and really leading the department that was responsible for how are we connecting this brand on a very hyper-local level to our audience and to the consumers within the spaces of music, dance, art, social innovation. And he spent about 10 years at Red Bull, was able to be a part of some amazing programs that I'm sure we're going to get into. And also with that, it was all about building teams, bringing the right people together to truly bring some pretty big visions to life. And after that, I made a pivot where I went to an organization, On Location Experiences, which was really about kind of sitting as the partner to these brands and organizations, such as the NFL, the Olympics, Live Nation, and, you know, AEG Live. And how were we serving as a partner to look at kind of their event, their product, and add experiences around that that could really amplify that for their consumer and for their audiences. So through all those experiences, the through line for me was about how are you really connecting vision, understanding vision, and driving a plan to operationalize that and scale that on a larger level? And how do you bring together the right people to do that? Mm. So I had a moment in my career and I thought, this kind of people side of things is actually, you know, where my passions are. And I have some hunches about what works and doesn't, but I wanted to test those kind of hypotheses. So I made the call to actually enter a master's program at NYU. And I left with a master's in science and executive coaching and organizational consulting. And was able to really kind of understand the science behind this, which led to me being able to launch Two Cats in a Palm Tree. Yes, I do have two cats in a palm tree lamp. To kind of bring all of this together. So I know that was a bit of a long intro, but really the idea of saying, how am I now bringing these coaching skills and really understanding kind of that science behind behavior with people? And supporting now other founders, other organizations, and teams to bring these big visions to life. So it's been very exciting, and yeah. I'm really happy to be here to talk to you about it.
I think it's fascinating, Erin, this whole concept of visions into operationalization, because so often companies, leaders are talking about visions for a company that, is a services organization or a product organization. But with some of the organizations you've been in, you've actually been building like experiences and emotions and some very like tangible, real, cutting edge stuff. So maybe a great place to kind of dive in is, what was it about those opportunities to be in there lining up with consumers and these experiences that started to build these hunches, and maybe provide a couple of examples of what those hunches were before you got into the science?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's interesting because it feels tangible to us because we've all had those experiences ourselves, right? We've entered an environment and there's something that emotional happens to us. But in many ways, these visions are very abstract, right? It's because the emotion I feel and the emotion you feel is very, very different, right? But really, what the role is how are you setting the container on the experiential side? It's really setting the container to kind of give that best opportunity for, if it's you or me, to come into an environment and be able to experience and touch the brand. And that really allows us to have that conversation together that builds kind of that they are kind of brand affinity. So how I translate that now into working with leaders is that in many ways, you know, a leader's role, especially for the team, is to help create that container, that environment, that experience for a team to come together and then be able to have their own processes, their own way of kind of getting things done. But it is that kind of first step of what's the container that we need to create to do that.
I'm intrigued because when we first talked, I was looking at culture in that title that you held at Red Bull, and I was like, is it the internal company culture? Is it the wider culture in which you're bringing products and experiences? How did you, and how have you seen there to be like symmetry and influence between those two?
Yeah, it's all in the same, right? Because people build culture. That's how culture is built. So the word culture in the title, which I'm glad that it also has and entertainment to kind of help focus that, because it can get very confusing. And especially now as I've kind of evolved my business personally into this space. But the word culture also is something that it is about kind of people connecting. And it's also from a global perspective, it's a word that translates well across kind of all countries and environment, which is an important way to say when you're talking about culture. It's really the lifestyle, it's people, it's pop culture is really the meaning of that. But especially at brands and the brands that really know who they are, right? The lived culture with the employees, with people who are part of that organization, is very much exactly the same as those conversations and that experience that's happening with an audience. So when you're actually looking at externally, how am I creating these moments for an audience, really translates directly back to how am I, though, actually aligned and authentically also delivering that experience and those feelings, those values to your consumers that are there every day, and many of them also work in your building.
Yes.
So you're kind of seeing that sort of at a brand like Red Bull, right? Giving wings to people and ideas, that is really what the brand stands for with its consumer, but also with its employees. It's not about everyone sitting in a room and coming up with the best ideas. It's how are they giving wings to people and ideas, and those ideas could come from anywhere. So again, creating those environments and that dialogue where you're able to allow all team members to pitch what is the idea that we should maybe look at bringing to life. And those usually come from a conversation they had with somebody that they know within their market. So it's one in the same. Yeah.
It ties in. We've been doing some work through the show around a methodology that kind of links or leverages a lot of insights and expertise that guests bring. And we called it the show methodology. So the O of the show acronym is for outside influence. And I think that point there that you just touched on, Aaron, is really interesting, that we can be any member of the team, particularly in today's fast moving, highly digital world, can be capturing something from a customer, from a supply chain vendor, but something from the outside world, even from a competitor that comes in as an idea and can be taken forward to change the way we're doing our work or evolving our product or service. So it must be fascinating in a business like that, that is so externally focused, that that energy is being intentionally harnessed within the container of the workplace too.
And it has to be for it to be able to move fast. Because if you're looking at working within culture, culture moves quickly, and especially for brands who are trying to be a part of that conversation, not because they want to force it, but because that they want to have an authentic conversation, right, with their consumers and audiences, they need to make decisions fast. They miss the moment. The news cycle moves fast. What is happening kind of in the world, dialogue. But there are those moments now in this hyper-connected reality we live in where we're all having the same laugh about the same thing that happened or the same conversation at the same moment. So when you also look internally in organizations, and this is something I do a lot with my work now, is talk about, okay, well, what does that look like for how you're set up and also how you're operating together to ensure that you can make those decisions quickly and that you also know what is the most important thing that has to stay consistent for us?
Yes.
And really, what are we trying to say as a brand? So if you're able to kind of create system structure in that container for these teams is really when you see, you know, the best things come to life is when you can move fast, be part of that. And many times you see the creative and that's where the star goes. But it's actually really that work underneath of how are you having the right structures, processes, conversations within teams so that they're able to have momentum towards that type of work versus all of the red tape and bureaucracy that can also happen many times in organizations.
Yeah, I love that. We've done some work, quite a bit of work with Dr. Andre Martin. He wrote the book Wrong Fit, Right Fit. And one of his case studies in there is actually about a creative who shares that she does her best work when she's within the systems and structure of an organization that makes it easy to take the ideas and bring the team on board and get moving, iterate, you know, learn from and leverage the talents and the superpowers of others. Because that allowed her to be very much focused on the creativity and not the politics and the red tape and the bureaucracy like you touched on.
And I love that you brought up the strengths of others, right?
Yes.
Because work, regardless if it's sitting in, some of these spaces that I think we can all say are fun because they connect us all, like music. In any work, right, we come together as teams because that's where the best work can be done and really big, important things can be done.
Yeah.
But that requires us to also have awareness of ourselves, really, what are our strengths? What am I bringing to the mix? But also, what are my teammates and those around me bringing to the mix?
Yes.
I think that there's a lot of time spent on, you know, team building, which I'm not saying is not important. But when I work with clients, we talk a lot about in your day-to-day work, what awareness can we have around your strengths, the strengths of those around you, and also real conversations about maybe what's in your way, like what are the constraints now, so that we can then just get that out of the way and get moving. Because we do know from research, too, that trust is built around teams when they're doing good work.
Yeah.
They want to get to the work. You know, and they want to make that easier. So I also think people are much more open to these conversations than sometimes we give them credit to.
100%. In fact, I think it's fast becoming a need in teams and workplaces. It ties into this whole theme of mattering. There's been a number of books come out recently on mattering. I was recently watching Jennifer Brahini Wallace, who's one of those authors, talk about her book. And she shared this story of a coach up at a school in Ohio, a boys' school, St. Ignatius, I think it is, and how he was using that in his sports teams. And their one of their mottos was better for others, not better than others. And I just thought that was so crisp and it was so cool. And people know when you're on a team, whether it's a sports team, a creative team, the accounting team, it doesn't matter, that when you are doing work that helps other people in any way, shape or form, that actually your work matters. It's appreciated. If you weren't here, this would be harder. And I think that's something that as humans, particularly with this whole loneliness epidemic, we're all kind of starting to realize the need for and starting to ask for more frequently.
Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. Very cool. Let's get back to those hunches, Erin. So, you know, piecing together some of that story, where were those hunches emerging? Where were there some particular things that you went to as tools in your tool bag when you were getting teams energized and launched?
You know, one of the first was really related to why do we see tension in project teams at times? Like, where does this come from? Especially when you would look at a space and say, this is fun work, right? This is work that you can, most people here are here because they're passionate about the topic at hand. So you know that passion is there. So where is the tension happening? And what I started to see as a pattern was that when my phone would ring, kind of sitting on top of the, you know, the department responsible for that function, it was a lot of, you know, this team is getting ahead of me, or and coming back to your time of mattering, like they're not valuing me. And what I started to realize was, you're saying the same word and we're not saying the same thing. So it really came down to, what is this idea of words matter and communication, and how are we creating, right, that kind of cadence and communication processes among team members? And how is that something that is scalable? And when you're also in global organizations where literally language then is added in as an additional, and then cultural norms, all these important things, how do you make it so you still move fast as a team and have these conversations earlier in a way that doesn't feel so daunting? You can't have a giant team meeting every time you need to make a decision or get something done. So at that time, I thought, is this really as simple as a conversation, you know, up front?
Yeah.
And this is where a tool, right, enabling a tool like the RASCI chart, you know, there's a RACI and a RASCI. And when I kind of implemented this idea of all departments coming together before any project and really having the opportunity to speak about, these are my tasks and this is what I need to do, and allowing teams to then say, oh, that's why you're asking me for, you know, this item at this time.
Yes.
And how that simple conversation really, really sped things up. So my hunch first started with, is this as simple as just understanding? And is this as simple as conversations? And really, as it kind of grew in my own career and grew as a leader and into organizations, really seeing that foundational thing of, yes, it actually is this simple, that really driving clarity, and that clarity really does clear drama in general, but that it is so important that we as humans are able to also kind of get there on our own and be able to like drive that together as a group. Really, what does clarity mean for us? And so that was something that now really figuring out what those systems and tools are that are the best fit for organizations, but to make sure you're kind of driving those conversations to build awareness, understand constraints, right? And then move into that acceptance phase of like, okay, so this is what we're dealing with. Now let's build a plan to move forward. So I think that really journey for me, and now understanding a little bit more, and save this for probably a different conversation, that research and science back about teamwork processes and team effectiveness and really understanding, it actually was that simple of kind of driving that conversation, ensuring that you have, you know, a clear flow of role clarity and goal alignment is so important. Another is just understanding all of your stakeholders.
Uh-huh.
And really what your purpose is and who you are, what value you are looking to provide and to who. In the creative spaces, in many times, you're also adding in this dynamic of bringing to life, coming back to vision.
Yeah.
Art, which to somebody, right, that produced, I mean, that is their way of communicating themselves to the world. That's not something in which you sit around and say, how can we change this to fit my business objectives?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean is, you know, sitting in an executive seat that you're not also having business kind of realities. So getting very clear on stakeholder alignment and understanding who are my stakeholders and really mm-hmm. focusing team purpose to delivering that is so critical to being able to operate effectively and to bring things to life. So trying to move away from this idea of only talking about friction internally and
yes.
where you can get a team to start seeing externally, you start to actually start releasing a little bit of friction. So
love
again,
that
being
one.
Able to see that and then read a lot and study about it and then understand the purpose of different tools that have shown to make this work. I was like, yes. Okay, this makes sense. Yeah.
It's super cool. I've got some thoughts on that one, particularly the external mindset and feedback and experience. But what did you find as you got into the science and the study that was showing up as reinforcing of that theme?
When you are looking at, and you kind of can talk from a team coaching perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really understanding the role of the system. So in one way, it's the role of the system and being able to see how that system and the wider system really can impact us as individuals and what we're then bringing to the team structure. It was
yes.
a very like light bulb moment to really understand that as much as you might want to, because it can feel maybe easier or even personally overwhelming to take into account society at large and the things that are happening, how much that actually is really influencing everything that's happening on a day-to-day level within the business.
Yeah.
And then that being back now of, oh, so for me to achieve my business results, I actually do need to find a way to have conversations about that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Because it also captures my attention just from a judgment standpoint. So many times when you think about tension on a team and the fact that words matter, when people are trying to have conversation about something and they're focused internally on, hey, Aaron, your mm-hmm. function isn't delivering this for me, or I need this by that date, it's perceived as judgment. Whereas if you go externally and you say, hey guys, we need this to happen in this way at that time, because that's how they want it. For some reason, I find teams can get more behind mm-hmm. the clarity of who are we serving versus how is the work getting done. And there's some kind of unlock that I see there from time to time. Is that aligned with your experience or emerging view?
It is aligned with my experience, and I would also say my emerging view and looking into the future. I think this is also sometimes labeled as the why.
Yes.
But I think it also falls a lot into the how, right? Like, like how are we going to do things and how are we making our decisions? It does make it a lot less personal and takes the conversation from the me to the we, right? What do we need to deliver?
Yes.
Right? Why is it that? And then this conversation around accepting it. So it's because you can also get in that loop with teams where,
yeah,
well, because they want it that way. And then you've created a villain, right?
Yes.
And then you get into the drama triangle very, very quickly, which isn't something that allows you then to scale how you're working together in a productive way.
Yeah.
By being able to kind of get under the hood a little bit and say, like, why are we doing this and how are we going to operate? That allows you to kind of have those trade-off moments of, okay, I get it. Maybe I do need something from Dane that Dane's team has repeatedly not delivered.
Yeah.
But, oh, the we, though, also need to be able to deliver 5 other things that maybe are a bigger priority, and that's where Dane's priority needs to go. But that might mean that our priorities as a team need to change. And that's something that we need to accept. And yeah. Right now you're seeing, I think, strategy outpacing capability more and more and quite quickly. And that's the conversation that I think helps really connect leadership into operations and execution of maybe we just don't have the capabilities right now to execute that, but we can. We just need to do something
else. Create the space time. That's so fascinating because it ties into, it's the old pit stop analogy, you know, that the person fueling can't be the most efficient at fueling because they need to step back or delay in order for people to get the tires on the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And as teams in what I would call the modern organization, the one that we've been living in for a little while, often how we work is driven by like compliance. And then often it's driven by efficiency. And effectiveness kind of comes way off at the end. But what I'm hearing you say there, Aaron, is by like leaning into the external perception, the what are we going to do for who and how, it allows you to get much more quickly into the effectiveness conversation as a team.
Mm-hmm. And seeing the value of it, and that by being effective, this drives efficiency, and I've seen this happen in teams, that unclick of like, oh, this is actually solving my problem that I've actually been holding on my notepad, right? Just waiting for the moment to bring up in this meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about this now. This is actually I'm seeing the cascade, and the team can start unpacking a bit of what do we need to address first? And that's so bringing that effectiveness conversation out is extremely valuable.
Yes. Interesting. It leads me to another question, which is around, in your world, I can only assume a lot of what you were doing was driven around some pretty firm deadlines, an event, a launch date, where so many other companies are in this like more amorphous continuous improvement cycle. What I've seen in those companies where it's less obvious what we're trying to achieve for who, by when, that going back to that efficiency debate, certain leaders, certain team members can kind of flood the zone, particularly now with AI, and they can be like saying, I've got all these things I want to do. Some of them like to be busy. Some of them like to play with new tools. Whatever the reason is, teams all of a sudden find themselves with these 37 or 50 point change plans underway, and it's hard to kind of draw that critical path and find priorities. In your projects or launches or events, did you see that same phenomenon occur, or you know, was there more clarity, more constraint within which you could determine what kind of gets on the dance card?
I think when you're talking about events and campaigns, of course, they're having a deadline of an actual live date, very helpful in many ways, because you have something that forces the trade-off conversation. It forces decisions.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times leaders, it's also about how are you creating those kind of milestones and timelines with your team.
Yeah.
Where I would see it though on the opposite side is working within spaces in which everyone has an experience with.
Mm.
Everyone in many ways then also can become an expert in. So when you talk about, for example, working in the space of music, everyone has an experience with music. They have an opinion about music. They have taste. You know, they have an opinion of the way things should go.
Yeah.
Which can very quickly turn into a roundabout conversation in a spiral that never stops because there's too much input. Right. And this is where role clarity is so important. And to get clear on roles up front within project teams and also within leadership teams who are kind of leading those independent divisions of whose role actually is it to make these calls? Because that's when you start spending too much time on the wrong thing, which is, for example, in music, what artists should we have play this event? Is that the right decision? Is that Well, you could actually make this decision a bunch of different ways, but we need to assign that to one group just to keep the flow going. And I bring this up because something I've been thinking about a lot lately is with AI becoming, especially the LLMs, now everyone just has access. Are you going to create a situation where understanding expertise and who actually has expertise and why within teams is going to continue to become even more important because we all have access to so much more information?
Interesting. So
what do you do with it? Because I think that now you're talking about these kind of evergreen conversations, that when you, of course, have deadlines and milestones, yes, it makes things a lot easier. So how are you kind of creating? So the kind of 2 points. So yes, and I also kind of see that it will be interesting with these access to LLMs. Yeah. If you're going to have this need to define expertise even more to avoid some of those traps.
Yeah, yeah, that opens up so many more conversations too, because there is science out there that suggests sometimes the expertise creates like a path dependence on this is how we've done it before, this is how we'll do it in the future. And actually the innovation comes from introducing people who maybe aren't experts in yet. So the whole experience with expert in soundbite, I think, is fascinating for teams. And you're right, AI will create probably a lot more experience with before it creates expertise in, but it's a really interesting kind of dynamic to be keeping an eye on for all teams.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, everything has that balcony and basement, and it's just something interesting to kind of watch. And I think when you specifically are talking about project teams, where it is, again, understanding that why, like, why are we doing this? Why are we assigning to Dane and maybe Dane's team to make this decision? Well, that's because we need to meet our deadlines and these are connected. So we have to. It's not as though Aaron's opinion doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Aaron's team next time that gets to sit in that seat because they're more equipped. They have more space. There's more time within that. But this time it really needs to sit with Dane's team.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Going back to, so that was very much the hunch on, understanding the stakeholders' purpose and who are we bringing value to. Going back to the earlier hunch on tensions in the project team, is there any, you mentioned the RASCI chart. What I'm hearing is both like the clarity of how the work's being done by who and why and when, but there's a decision-making conversation here as well. Mm-hmm. How have you seen decision making on those trade-offs landing best? And you know, what is your study, what is your research suggesting may be more important in teams as we go forward into this kind of LLM fueled team environment?
So I think I'd first ask that when we say best, what do we actually kind of mean by best there? Is that everyone feels good about it, or that we're kind of moving towards, you know, the best results. What I've seen is landed, right, the best with teams, even if it might not feel great, but that clarity and really having open conversations about what could be looked at as a constraint sometimes actually does drive the most creative and innovative problem solving or new ideas within a team, but you can't dance around it. And so when you talk about decision-making rights, it's very important to really have the conversation about who has the decision-making rights here and how are we actually driving accountability? Because if not, you quickly are in an organization where there is no accountability.
Yeah.
So one of the steps even with project teams that I found is helpful is to go through almost an org chart process for the project team where you are putting on a piece of paper. Like for this project, who's in the lead? And this isn't somebody who is now everybody's boss, but what is the project lead really responsible for?
Yeah, I love that.
Bringing people together, tracking tasks, making sure that everyone's coordinated. Great. And then also, who are they accountable to, right?
Yes.
Who on, maybe, you know, I am leading a vertical. That does not mean that I'm the, you know, president of the company, but I need to be on that chart and truly understand now, okay, I have accountability for this and have that moment to say, but can I really make those decisions?
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting conversation I've seen within teams, how empowered people start to feel when they can actually take true accountability for their work.
Yeah.
So driving that conversation in a tool simple as what is the org chart and what does it mean to sit in these different roles?
Yeah.
Going back to, I think we've talked a lot about sometimes we miss the foundation. You know, when you go back to the basics of just who's doing what, how much this really streamlines and makes things move faster. And having that conversation even with leadership teams that, of course, how you introduce it may be a little bit different. But I've seen so many leadership teams sit and say, oh, that's a good point. Like, really, what are we responsible for? And what does that look like? And how is that connected? Has started to drive, you know, true opening up what are the things we need to address to give better direction to the organization overall or just move faster.
That actually reminds me a lot, Erin, of some work that I've been doing under systems leadership theory with Dr. Ian McDonald. And he talks about the two fundamental questions being, what is the work and whose work is it? Which is, you know, very much where you just explained it to be. And while org charts don't feel very sexy when we're doing like team effectiveness work, a project org chart is a wonderfully clear visual representation. You can, whether it's decision rights or role, or how we meet to make decisions, I think it's really key. And I love that you double clicked on the value of constraints in driving some momentum for these teams, because a lot of his work will suggest that when leaders make a lot of the decisions, we're going to do it this way for these reasons, they take away the accountability or even the human how of, you know, how Erin likes to do work or Dane likes to do work. And that can actually lead to depression. Like I've got no real influence or bearing on the work. So a lot of his work is based around constraints and higher up leaders in that project org chart having a power of veto, but not necessarily a power of this is the decision we're making. And you know, removing the human innovation or choice of how that work gets done by the people who are responsible for doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that also, I think, gives the opportunity when we look at the future of just the workplace and, you know, really giving employees the opportunity to grow in a way that we certainly had in our careers. But if you look at AI now moving into a team, and an agent moving into a team is truly a teammate, how are you still giving those development opportunities to those in the organization to truly understand what accountability is and find their way, develop their style? And in these kind of simple fixes really provide those opportunities in organizations. And I know a lot of founders I work with, for example, they're moving so fast, they don't have time to do a whole let's stop and take our eye off the business for a minute to reset. So something as simple as how are you having this conversation as a team?
Yeah.
Really kind of adds that definition, and it's about their work, which we know that when people are doing great work together, that's when they really come together and develop trust. It's about getting to the work faster.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's where through the pandemic, we lost our way a lot because we started thinking about perks and other ways of supporting employees that wasn't about the work. And while it felt good, it didn't land. And it was interesting, you said earlier, sometimes the what is best didn't feel great when it landed, but it helped the team move on and be proud of the work and really play a role and have mattering. So I guess that brings me to my final question, Erin, which is for a leader that might be listening today or a coach that might be listening today, that's going to walk in and be, you know, dealing with a very dynamic situation, lots of change that has to happen quickly, not much time to take the eye off the business. What are some good sort of opening questions or framing for how you have that simple conversation, how you get started on the right foot?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's a couple go-to questions I have. I always look at that first phase being about awareness, right? Like awareness of what are we trying to, on the consulting side, really solve, or even on the coaching side, kind of awareness for where that conversation is. And,
yeah,
you know, when things go wrong here, like, what's the story that we tell about it?
What is it?
Which is something that is a way to just start building awareness, but of what are kind of the things we point to as that villain, or maybe the things that actually we need to fix. It's kind of a simple question that starts, you know, opening that up. Or, you know, what does success look like here, and who defined that? Is another simple question that I've used a lot as a leader, but also, you know, now as a work as a coach. So really get teams thinking and talking about that, and really moving to like, well, what does success look like for us? And then aligning that to business objectives, something that's a super simple question. And then another one, because I do a lot of work in strengths, I really deeply believe that when we're all operating from what we're good at, like, you and I are going to get to point B in a different way. But what's important is that I'm doing it in the way that's best for me, and you're doing the way it's best for you. But it's really asking the team, like, what does this team do better than any other team?
Love
you know,
that.
Any other team you've been a part of. And then a follow-up to that is, okay, so how are we building on that, and how can that come to life in different ways? So these are kind of just simple questions that I think open up a lot of interesting conversations about, you know, what does success look like?
Yeah.
How do we go about things, and how do we not need to break the system or stop and pause? Like, how can we just continue to build on what we're, you know, already doing? And then also, what is the things that get us distracted? Like, what's the, where are we kind of just chattering and not really then doing something about it? And so these conversations tend to, I think, link into the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't require you as a leader to kind of stop everything, but you can just throw them into conversations to help redirect.
I love that. And it reminds me of something a guest recently shared about admiring the problem. Some teams will love to meet and talk about the problem endlessly rather than, you know, those really important questions around, particularly, you know, what does success look like and who designed that, who decided that. Maybe just kind of an extension there, you could explain why it matters who decided or designed that success metric.
Yes, yeah. I think that what you start kind of even coming back to stakeholders, value, you start to help frame up both accountability, because a team is accountable for delivering something. There's a reason that team came together, right? There is a deliverable. And the more that you have people really bought in and understanding what you're trying to deliver and why, the more that you can then take accountability and also really internalize that goal. So you know that that's going to be driving, you know, better work, more meaningful work, kind of more mattering. And you're also able to then identify, hey, is from a leadership perspective or maybe from a business perspective, if you're growing fast, you're moving fast, change is inevitable. Sometimes you start drifting. Maybe direction is off, or there is a change in the external environment that you just maybe have missed. And it's an easy way to stop and say, oh, wait, is that my, I need to define success for the team so they know what they're delivering.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that. So it's a good way for, I think, leaders as well to just get a gut check of if they're providing the clearest
direction. I love that. I love putting it, and I'm hearing Erin both puts it on the leader's list of accountabilities to do it, but it also creates awareness in the team for, hey, if you've got a challenge with this, if you've seen something move in the market and you think we need to design or define differently, here's who you go and talk to. Because so often, particularly large organizations, the metrics just happen, that you don't really spend a lot of time understanding why. So I love that you're actually putting a name or a role behind it. Super cool. Well, we've covered some cool ground today from, you know, the systems and the clarity that allow teams to kind of move through the tensions and be very productive, be very innovative, get past, some of the judgment and some of the negativity that can show up in teams. I love the way that you tied that into the external sort of value that we're creating for others, other stakeholders. And as we came further into that, I think this whole experience in expert with soundbite, to me, that's fascinating because I can just see it changing so much right now. So bringing that sort of coaching mindset and that experience to how is that showing up on teams, and how do we then think about those project team org charts. It's a great way to like scan quickly and then set your org chart and then test. So I love how practical and grounded some of these tips are from both your hunches and growing, you know, body of work in the consulting coaching space. And then as we kind of wrap up here, I think those key questions, I'm particularly energized by the fact that these are ways that any team members can just get down to the brass tacks of what might be getting in the way without going and doing a full intervention or an offsite. I think creating more courage in teams to be having those questions and shining a light on, you know, where there may be better ways forward is super liberating. So thank you for sharing in your experience and wisdom, Erin. And if any of our listeners want to connect with your material or find you at Two Cats and a Palm Tree, how do they best do that?
They can do that through LinkedIn, Erin Woody, Two Cats and a Palm Tree, or on social media, Two Cats and a Palm Tree as well. And I look forward to connecting with everyone. And thank you so much, Dane, for inviting me to be here. I hope it was valuable.
Oh, it's a blast. Lots of dots connected, which I knew was going to be the case for the show. So thank you. And I look forward to teaming up with you in the future.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Erin.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.